have to be zealously and vigorously maintained. But it was let slide. It was let slide. The executive summary of the report also says that the fatigue problems with the bridge's approach span were another part of the problem. It attributed the fatigue problems primarily to what it called unanticipated out-of-plane distortions in the girders. Now, I'm no engineer, but that makes it sound to me like they were able to identify that the girders were beginning to twist and or buckle. Also in the report were the words, "Fatigue cracking is not expected during the remaining useful life of the bridge." Charming. The rotten stuff is never expected, is it? 2 years later, the U.S. Department of Transportation's National Bridge Inventory makes the conclusion that the bridge is structurally deficient. Structurally deficient. Now, what do you do? How do you respond to that? How can one help but respond to that as I'm responding? By wondering why something wasn't done about it. Now, I'm sure that there's some libertarian or right-winger or Republican out there already babbling away of it. It's not the federal government's fault to make sure that Minnesota... This is the interstate highway system. This is the national defense highway system. And it's fallen apart. One of these evenings when we talk to our good friend Alan, the over-the-road truck driver, I'm going to ask him about America's highway system. Because he sees it day in and day out. And he knows what it's like. The people that are on the roads can tell you that the roads are not in good shape. And the roads aren't in good shape because we're busy bombing the snot out of Iraq. And because we're busy doing everything but attending to the people's business. Because, after all, public highways are socialized highways, aren't they? This is sickening. This is just sickening. And the man that George Bush has renamed Governor, what was it? Pallente? Pallente? Said that these were minor deficiencies. He said it was last inspected both in 2005 and 2006. There were no structural deficiencies identified according to the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Now, as far as how the bridge collapsed, one expert said, according to this report, "I'm totally puzzled as to why both ends of the bridge would come down all at once. When my colleague tested it, it was very low stress." That's Ted Galambos from the University of Minnesota. He said, "I don't think it was overload, so it could have been either some fatigue, failure, or some sudden buckling that would cause the failure." Oh, Lord, I hope we don't have a Minnesota bridge truth movement that arises out of this. But, I don't know. This is broken America. This is America where the dog food's poisoned. This is America where you can get killed by peanut butter. This is America where you can get killed driving across a bridge or just living your life behind a levee in the Ninth Ward. This is broken America. This is busted America. This is falling apart America. This is frayed at the edges and coming apart at the seams America. And you care about it, and I care about it, and we pay our taxes, and we do what we're supposed to do. And the stuff still doesn't get fixed. Why? Why? Is it because Congress is adding too much pork to the appropriations bill? Or is it because the people who are supposed to be leading don't have their eye on the ball? Aren't paying attention to the problems, are more obsessed with made-up problems than with the real ones that confront us. I got a bunch of stories this evening, various and sundry. Katrina alone did not have to be the way it was. We will find out by the time this investigation is done that this bridge did not have to collapse, that the people who were injured, terrified, and killed in this collapse didn't have to suffer through that. There is a scene in one of my favorite books, Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men, where they talk about a school building collapse because it was made of politics rotten brick. Well, this was a politics rotten bridge, and we have politics rotten levees. We have a politics rotten corporate food grid. And yet, the president comes out today to engage in a little bit of political theater, wrangling over, what was it, $22 billion out of a $3.9 trillion budget? Talk about fiddling while Rome burns. Heartbreaking, disgusting, and perplexing. Susan is calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
snarl, 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 snarl.
Growl, and growl, growl, growl to you.
Yeah. Let me read you a small quote, very short quote.
Okay.
This is from the year 2006, and this is on our blog on the main page. I just put it up there.
Okay.
Our friend ELO brought it to our attention. Literally wielding a big red veto stamp to appease the no-tax crowd that remains hell-bent on a something-for-nothing relationship with government, Governor Tim, he's never going to live this down, Polenta, deep-sixed the bipartisan transportation bill. How dumb can they be, he sneered, of the lawmakers who dared to approve a tax hike to fix the state's roads. Unquote.
Wow. This is Tim Pawlenty.
Yep.
Or Tim Pawlenty. I'm completely lost now. And so he something that would have perhaps prevented this, he vetoed.
Yep.
I'm understanding that right here.
Yes, that's exactly what he did.
You know, this is the kind of thing that gets you Hamlet's father's ghost walking around your bedroom at night. It really is.
The article is up on our blog on the main page. People can go look at it and click. There's a link there from there to the rest of the article. It is rather inflammatory, and it was all written in 2006.
And, of course, because we've got people like Grover Norquist running around America saying that taxes are evil,
mm-hmm.
who put pressure on politicians. And you know what? So there's some truth to some of this.
Yeah.
Susan, you don't need a tax increase. I don't need a tax increase. A guy who makes $15 an hour doesn't need a tax increase to pay for these things.
$10 million companies need to pay their taxes.
They need to pay some taxes.
Yeah, some taxes. They're not paying any now.
Effectively, no, they're not. And the effective tax rate on the one-tenth of 1% of America that owns, what, 30 or 40% of America's wealth is effectively the same as the tax rate on you and me. That's wrong. There were
actually, it's higher for you and me.
Well, that's probably true. So there was a time in this country that the income tax came in more or less concurrent with paying for World War One.
Yeah.
And there were statements made that those who got the most from government should pay the most for it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why that's crazy talk. I don't think it is.
No. And I have to tell you, Okay, I live in a state with a lot of bridges.
Well, sure.
I live just outside of Portland. There's bridges all over the place here. Plus, we're in an earthquake zone. The governor of all the governors, Republican, Democrat, they don't give a rip here. Almost everything can go down the tubes, including the schools first. But the bridges come first because they know those things drop into the rivers and they're going to be held to pay.
Right, and you've got the actual example out in that region of, what was her name, Galloping Gertie?
Galloping Gertie.
Yeah. But these things, but it's please, lest we make a horrible, horrible mistake in this, Susan, we're not talking about one bridge. We're not talking about one levee. We're talking about if you sent out an army of inspectors all across the land.
It's the whole system.
It's the whole system.
Yeah, with exceptions where people have just said, okay, we're not going to pay for schools. We're going to pay to fix these bridges.
And you see, I'm not trying to be overly, yes, I am. I want to place blame where blame, and I'll play the blame game. That's what Tony Snow likes to call it. You know who's at fault for this? It's not just George Bush. It's not just congressional Republicans. It's people like Grover Norquist, who said he wanted to make the government so small you could drown it in a bathtub. Well, if government is so small that you can drown it in a bathtub, the bridge across the bathtub's going to collapse, too.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the interstate highway system, but you know, like we're on I-5 here, major north-south artery. Other than the bridges, it sucks big time.
Yeah, and it's not, again,
it's falling apart.
I can tell you horror stories about I-65 that runs from Indianapolis to Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
There are places on that if you drive across them going at speed. You can be thrown into the next lane because of the collapses in the pavement.
Yeah. But there's another person, there's another party to blame in all of this.
Okay.
The American voter, because they sat there and they swallowed that crap.
Yeah, they did. And that's what I'm getting at. It's the Grover Norquists who spend millions of dollars to reach people whose some total comprehension of American politics might have happened in a civics class 30 years ago, and they just hear taxes bad.
Yeah, but hey, these people know how to read. It didn't stop me from finding out, hey, Grover Norquist, con man.
Yeah, but again, that's the thing that we fall prey to a little bit, Susan, in the atmosphere that we have created for ourselves. We and this is progressives and this is liberals, this is decent people who do take their citizenship seriously and do try to keep themselves informed of as to what's going on and to look behind the curtain. That's not the majority of America. It is not.
Well, then there's something really wrong with the majority of America because they should. They need to. It's barely less important than their own breathing.
They've got a reasonable chance at understanding that marriage is a union between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
Because they are browbeaten with that on a daily basis because they can't turn around. But the business of citizenship is difficult, Susan. It's something that you really do have to involve yourself in, and to sit around and say, you know, gee, I wonder if the infrastructure is okay. That's not sexy, and you can't put an ankle monitoring device on it and take pictures of it like Lindsay Lohan.
No, but by the same token, it might save your life when you're driving down the highway someday and hit a bad section and get tossed into right in front of a semi doing 70 miles an hour.
Yeah. Oh, I don't disagree with you. The question becomes, the larger overarching question, Susan, becomes how do we get this information to the American people? Do we only talk about it once every 4 years because we're having a presidential election?
No, we talk about it constantly. Elections be damned. Keep pounding. That's how the right-wingers built up that incredible machine of theirs.
Precisely.
And pounded it, pounded it, pounded it, pounded it,
24 hours a day, 7 days a week of Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, Savage. I got a sound clip from Savage that's going to just set your hair on fire in a little bit. All of these people, day in and day out, telling people it's bad for them to have a government that's competent. Telling them that it's bad for them to pay for the upkeep that literally keeps them alive. Telling them that it's bad for government to be able to respond in cases of emergency. Telling them that what is important is whether or not two guys pick out a China pattern and get monogrammed towels, for the love of God.
Did you ever see a movie called Pump Up the Volume?
Yes, I did.
Okay. You know what the progressives need? The equivalent.
Christian Slater?
Yeah. The equivalent of, I'm not saying the illegality of that radio type, but what we need is citizen radio broadcasters.
Wow, that's kind of what we're doing, isn't it?
Uh-huh. If you have to do it on the Internet, fine, let's do it. But just let's pump it up, pump the volume up.
Exactly. And frankly, some of this, in terms of pumping up the volume, I go back to one of the things that I've mentioned in the past. Just on a dare, just for the hell of it, instead of going to a movie some evening, find out when your county commission meets. You know, you don't have to talk to a congressman, Susan. You don't, and I'm not talking directly to you. I know how active you are.
Yeah, I understand.
But you don't have to talk to a congressman or a senator or write a letter to the president. Show up at your county commission meeting. First of all, 15 or 20 people sitting in the county commission meeting who aren't reporters, who are having to do it because they're getting paid to do it, you know, citizens just kind of sitting there staring at them and watching government happen, will scare the bejesus out. It'll shock the county commission half to death, quite frankly. But the other thing is, this is where the anti-war stuff should be taking place. This is where the demands for government competence should be taking place. You tell the county commission, you make the county commission the commissioners who have to run in a much more circumscribed area, that you're paying attention and you want to see their activity, and that the power flows uphill.
Especially since...
And there's your pumping up the volume.
Yeah, especially since, let's face it, if you're going to call a spade a spade and face up to some unpleasant truth, calling your congressman, senator, screaming at the president, you can do that. I do that all the time. And I can tell you, it does almost no good. But if you show up at that county commission...
The school board, the mayor's city council.
Or the city council, same thing.
Yeah.
They pay attention. Because the numbers are so much smaller.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, our little town, they really, really hate to see my husband and I show up to council meetings. They really do.
Good.
We're going to get obnoxious.
Be a stone in their shoe, Susan. If we had more stones, we might actually get up and start walking instead of just sitting there rubbing our feet.
Yeah.
Susan, I got to run along, but thank you so much.
You have a real nice night.
I'm going to
Agnes.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And David calling from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob. I think while I was holding, did I hear correctly that you, like I, feel that these bridges coming down or levees caving in and all these other infrastructure failures, that these are, among other things, the bitter fruit of right-wing hate radio?
Sure it is.
Fighting against good sense and real discussion coming forward? I think I did.
You did.
Well, let's talk a little bit about bridge construction. I was graduated from the engineering department at the University of Tennessee, but I'm not a full-on civil engineer guy. I'm not the one, but you
had a cup of coffee.
I can at least understand their language. When you're dealing with metal and you're dealing with fabricated metal and you're dealing with things built of fabricated metal, especially during World War II and immediately thereafter, you had to acknowledge that metals developed fatigue, which was a relatively new thing. Prior to that, you did calculations. X amount of weight against this much steel. Will it stand or will it fall? And it was a much simpler thing. Stress was not part of it. During World War II especially, the hulls of ships and the superstructures of aircraft, they found out that not just the simple load-bearing capability, but how long and what type of stress this was under made a big difference. But nobody in the civil engineering world thought that bridges were susceptible to stress. And stress can come from standing up under weight for extended periods of time, or, and here's an important one, vibrations. And today, the ranking guy that speaks about this sort of stuff in the state of Minnesota said flatly, these design distinctions were acknowledged within the leading edge of the engineering community in the mid to later 60s. So a bridge built in 1967 was built on older technology. That's the first part of the perfect storm. You can tell from the pictures, and it's been acknowledged, that bridge was widened to put even more lanes of traffic than when it first started life. So 140,000 vehicles a day going over that bridge, causing vibration, with the additional weight that was put on it when the lanes were widened, and now you're in a perfect storm. But the other part of this, the third side of this ugly geometric figure, Minnesota started, and at about the time they would have been thinking about, how do we work with this bridge? What about this bridge? What about this fatigue factor? What about this? What about Minnesota started creeping to the right. Taxes bad. Infrastructure, we'll get it later. We've got to make sure we don't do this and don't do that with some social agenda. So with hate radio screaming, no, you can't, no, taxes are bad, you're all crooked, don't, no, privatize it all, don't listen to those guys. Some people had to try to explain a new mechanically or a new civil engineering phenomenon to people like the local Hannity, the local Limbaugh, etc., etc. So there's your governor in 2006 saying, how stupid to say we're going to spend money on that. No. We're going to cut taxes. So there you are.
And, of course, this is Minnesota. You know, if it was in Florida, you'd be talking about the effect of salt air corrosion on steel, blah, 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 blah. But wait, it's Minnesota. They salt the roads a lot. So
living in central Wisconsin and traveling on business to the Twin Cities every 6 weeks year round, if they don't salt, they shut down for 6 months a year. You can, and the temperature changes that a structure outside Minnesota can, I mean, Minneapolis, St. Paul can have a 100-degree day in the summertime, and it can be 20 below zero in the wintertime, and you've got all those freeze-thaw cycles to put something like that through.
Okay, and from the engineering standpoint, that does
it accelerates everything that a bridge doesn't want to have happen to it.
And it happens like on the molecular level, right?
Not on the molecular level, molecule to molecule, grouping to grouping, but where you're talking about steel, you know,
yeah,
concrete, whatever, bolts. And, it's criminal.
This wasn't a freak accident. I think that's what we're going to find out, David. This wasn't just, oh, gosh, it was a perfectly good bridge and, you know, God did it.
No. Somebody, if an informed, caring individual is allowed to work with the science and the data gathering capability that person and a group of people with he or she, if somebody's allowed to do the work, they'll find out why the bridge went down. And you will not find that it is a one in a million situation where we could build 1,000 more bridges and wait another 50 years and this would never happen again. No.
And we'll probably learn the hard way that that's not the case, because this will happen again.
Excuse me, aren't the winters pretty tough in West Virginia? Don't you guys salt roads? Don't you have rivers that are pretty good size? Got any bridges 40 years old, Bob?
I got a bridge that opened in 1975, 6 miles from here, that's the longest single steel arch bridge in the Western Hemisphere. Just like that bridge was a single steel arch.
Well, now, let's just hope that it was opened in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
That means it was designed in 1970 and bid in 1972 and constructed. Let's hope that the awareness developed during World War II for fatigue of metals was applied to your bridge.
Had percolated its way down to the United States Steel U.S. Bridge Division?
Yeah, the one that probably had the steel shipped in from Korea. Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, and this is they manufactured it with a kind of steel that they were really proud of because they said, you don't have to paint this, so it already looks like it's rusted through. Now, bear in mind, David, this is entirely ancillary to the whole discussion, I guess. But we've got this little festival that we have around here called Bridge Day. People who watch ESPN and things like that may have seen it because on Bridge Day, which is the third Saturday in October, it's the closing of Gauley River rafting season. People come and they base jump from the bridge. They close down two lanes of the four-lane bridge, and everybody can walk out. And the hot dog vendors and corn dogs and T-shirts and all that stuff. And people with parachutes in their hands, some of them get married and then jump off the bridge. There are people have died.
Yeah,
that kind of
one big decision in a day is enough for me.
Yeah, I know. Me too. But bear in mind, after September the 11th, 2001, they closed down Bridge Day, the single largest one-day economic impact in southern West Virginia. They shut it down because they were afraid that Osama bin Laden was going to, parachute off our bridge and throw dynamite underneath it. Who knows? But there's a national security threat to the bridge. Now, take a breath and take a moment and compare whether or not, compare the likelihood, the statistical likelihood, and you're far more the math guy than I am, compare the statistical likelihood of Al-Qaeda blowing up our beloved bridge versus some level of either industrial negligence or enforced decrepitude by virtue of a reduced tax base bringing that bridge down. Which one is statistically more likely, David?
There's no doubt. You knew the answer before you finished the question. There's going to be that bridge and five more fall to ineptitude rather than Al-Qaeda. I'm sorry. Even in the most remote place in the world, for somebody to try to rig a bridge to blow up, they'd be there for a day or two. I'm sorry. They would be noticed.
With the aid of
hate radio and a bunch of inept politicians falling victim to that, and a bunch of people not wanting to pay attention on the other end of the radio, oh no, that stuff could replicate itself all across the nation several times.
But bear in mind, when they shut down Bridge Day, and it used to be that Bridge Day, two lanes were shut down and people were walking, milling around back and forth. The other two lanes were open to traffic. Well, we finally got Bridge Day back, but the whole thing shut down, and all traffic has to be diverted like 50 miles around the bridge. That's why this bridge was so important to the commerce of southern West Virginia.
So you've got to go back to 1974 and further back. You've got to go back to 1950 in terms of if you're going to go where you used to go on the other side of the bridge.
Precisely. But at the time they shut it down, you would be surprised the number of people who said, well, that's very prudent. I hadn't thought about it, but I bet Al-Qaeda would like to blow up our bridge.
It is just disgusting when people fall for that.
It's the coward nation factor, David.
Well, they've been herded and prodded and pushed and yelled at and programmed and propagandized. So I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second. But I see it through it. So do you. So do most of your listeners. Fear, it's what's for dinner.
Yep. There's a reason we did that.
Oh, they're sure. I love those when those run. Well,
we'll put one on just for you, but it, yeah, I appreciate the insight. And
there's good engineering theory that made this just the perfect storm, followed by hate radio saying no, you don't let.
But just
listen to that.
Just because it gets the blue blaze is cold in Minnesota is no reason to expect that something like this can't happen in Texas or California or Florida or New York, Pennsylvania, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to see more and more and more and more of this, David. And it's
well,
not
bridges that are older, and there is a way. And this was the thing I should have mentioned earlier. There are ways, but they're expensive to overcome and account for fatigue. Stress fatigue causing bridges to go down. You go back into certain areas, and rather than whatever safety factor was built in previously, you up that safety factor and you overwhelm this problem of fatigue within the metal via extra metal. But oh no, they didn't want to do that. They successfully fought that off. And then the whole thing was made to happen even faster by virtue of adding lanes. So there's even more vibration, more weight, et cetera, and there she went.
And there she went. And the stories I read today, there are stories of people who were trapped in the rubble, who laid there and died and said their farewells to the emergency responders.
Yes.
That's nightmare stuff. And
it certainly is that the last thing you know about as you slip into the river or whatever happened to them. My name is, please tell, I love them and I care about them. Can you imagine the mental state of the first responder that's got to take that message home with
him? That was frankly the first thing I thought of, David. You know, because this isn't just bridges. This isn't just highways. This isn't just airports or our railroad infrastructure. This is the follow-up PTSD counseling. This is what happens to people when they're still living in a trailer a year, 2 years going on from Katrina. This isn't that's what I'm afraid of, is that we might talk about it in terms of some part of our country's infrastructure failing. This is the whole shooting match.
One last example. The next time you happen to stop at a rail crossing and the thing's going ding, 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 and maybe it's a curve leading up to going through that rail crossing, and you're sitting there and here comes a freight train. Well, the same level of neglect is being applied to those roadbeds and track as that bridge experienced. You could be under that freight engine in a matter of nanoseconds.
Just as it gets thrown from because of faulty measure.
Just
because after all, the railroad freight company has a far higher interest in profit, right? Because it's all about the profit, isn't it?
Quarterly profit.
Yeah, quarterly.
You have to plan infrastructure repairs out for years. But nope. When you're running a freight line, when you're running a railroad, you got to be thinking about that quarter. Well,
oh my God.
Time for me to get out of the way.
All right, thanks, David.
Got to be out of the house for a little while.
All right, well, travel safely. I know.
I shall.
Knowing where you are, you're near some of those really fun parts of I-65.
I won't be on that.
Lucky
they're
you.
They're doing enough to I-65 north of me. I don't. It's like playing pinball driving through about an 8 mile stretch. So I miss out on that if I can.
All right, good enough. Take care, David.
Bye, bye, Bob.
Bye now. All right, let's, Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. But on this one, I've heard a great deal of conjecture, a lot of opinion, and a whole lot of, well, maybe it's this, that, or the other, right, on this bridge collapse in Minneapolis. Bob, I was born in Minnesota. I know the Minnesotans. I know the people. I was born there, and I grew up there, and I left there to fight a war for them, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, think about this just for a moment, people. People of the earth, I don't want conjecture. I don't don't want opinion. I want the facts. I want to know. I want the forensic facts. I want to have them pull that steel up out of the Mississippi River. I want them to examine it with a microscope or an electron microscope or whatever.
I was about to say that very thing, yeah.
I want the truth, nothing but the truth. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. I don't want conjecture. I do not want one of those, these opinions of these Bolsheviks and these, even the left wing. Okay, Bob? I'm tired of opinions. I want facts. I want it to be.
Well, the fact is, everything's broken, Bob.
Yeah,
and this is going to happen again and again and again.
Down. It, Bob, it didn't go down like a collapse. It went down. It just went down. You know, like in a movie, it was like set up.
Well, I've got a piece of email here from our listener, Marty, who says, you know, there's some good to be taken out of this because we know that it will be rebuilt at warp speed because the Republican National Convention is in Minneapolis next summer.
Well, yeah, okay. So Laura Bush is coming to, you know, to have the Overlook. What was that, the Overlook?
The Overlook.
The Overlook. The Overlook is where that demonic, remember that? The Overlook, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Overlook, you know, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm...
It's a tourist, you know, we're less than 24 hours, almost, yeah, just a little more than 24 hours since it happened, and already it's a tourist attraction.
Yeah, it's a tourist attraction. It's the Overlook. We got a place to look at this collapse of this... How did they get it up so fast? Or was it planned in advance? No, that's...
Don't even take me there, Gunny.
No, I'm going to tell you something. It had to have been, because guess what? They're on they're on the dot. They're in a hot seat right now. You got Congress breathing down their back. You got the Senate kind of thinking, well, maybe we shouldn't, you know. And they're doing a lot of things to question what they've been doing for the last 7 or 8 or 20 years, right? They've got lots of people asking questions, and they can't stand the questions. So what do they got to do? Well, let's have another disaster. Well, hey, well, we can't have it in Louisiana. We just had Katrina down there, didn't we? Yeah, and we can't have it.
But that's
New
the
York.
Thing. That's the thing, Bob. They don't have to make the disasters. They can just sit around and be negligent until the next one happens.
Well, I don't know if it's negligence so much as it is a calculated. Okay, well, we had one in New York. Now we had one in Louisiana down there in.
What purpose would it serve, though?
It would take your eye off the ball. You wouldn't be looking at what Congress is doing, and you wouldn't be supporting Dennis Kucinich. You wouldn't be fighting to get Al Gore to be the president that he was elected to be. You wouldn't be fighting for anything else except for, oh my gosh, Fox News has the collapsing bridge in Minneapolis. See, they take your eye off. It's kind of like the old what's that thing that the magician does? You know, he has this slinky little gal out there.
Yeah, watch the birdie.
Swimsuit, and she jumps around while he's sticking the ball in his back pocket and coming up with a dove out of his glove. See, they're doing the same thing, Bob. They're deflecting your thought away from what you should be thinking about, and it's taking them out, Bob. We ain't got no time to worry. I mean, my darling wife, Glenda, her father lives in Minneapolis, South Minneapolis. And her brothers live in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One in one city, one in the other. So, I know that country. I know it very well. My roots are there.
Sure.
But I'm not looking at a collapsing bridge. I'm looking at what they're doing to the nation.
Everybody, collapsing country, Bob.
Everybody is worried about or thinking about, oh, the what has happened there, but I want forensics on that one. I want some real, I want some forensics. I want them to pull a steel up out of the...
Well, you reckon they'll do with the steel with this, what they did with the steel from the World Trade Center and hustle it off to China before they get a chance to do any testing?
China, won't they? Well, let's stop them from doing it for a change. Let's tell them, no, you can't take it. This is a crime scene. It's a crime scene, Bob.
No, I won't go there with you, Bob. I will not go there with you. The last thing this country needs is a Minneapolis Bridge truth movement.
Well, let's have a truth movement of just this. Suspect everybody. I suspect everybody. I don't trust anyone anymore. I do not trust my neighbor.
Well, that's another casualty of the Bush administration.
See, that's what we have to do. Stop being trustful and demand the facts. Not the truth, but the facts. You show me the facts. You show me where you can go back in the bibliography and show me the papers. Come on up with it, huh? Rumsfeld in Congress went up there before Congress and lied, and it was deceitful. And
you mean about Pat Tillman?
Yes, about Pat Tillman. Pat Tillman was a true American patriot, and he died for his patriotism. In fact, he was murdered. He was murdered because, Bob, I can shoot. I mean, you know, I'm capable of taking a rifle out and putting, 7 out of 10 rounds in the 10 ring and maybe 3 out of the 10 in the 9 ring, okay?
Okay.
But that's the way that we were taught to do it. Way back when I was a young man with lots of hair on my head. I mean, I'm not bald, but I'm...
I get it, yeah.
See, the thing is, Bob, I was taught how to do that, and there are people that are being taught on this globe to not think. They don't think, Bob. They have no capability of...
Well, it's a known fact, Bob, that there was a sniper unit along with that convoy.
Oh, absolutely. And, hey, Bob, the thing is, you can't, even a good sniper can't put 3 in the bull at that range if they're talking about how far he was away and put them as close as they did. That was a very tight group, and I can do it with a stationary target, but I can't do it with one that's moving. And Pat Tillman was a living being, and you can't group.
That was, that was the thing that was brought up in the piece that I had, a couple of days ago that I found over at opednews.com, Vietnam vet like yourself, who had dealt with firearms and moving human beings at relatively similar ranges, and he said that was not a shot group like on a paper target with Pat Tillman. He said that was a kill, a check, and a recheck. Those were his words, not mine.
Kill, a check, and a recheck. He was down and dead after the first round hit him, and they just made sure. When you shoot at that kind of a range, and they can't say it's 100 yards, because I can't put 3 that close, that quick, into a human being. No way. I know better. I absolutely know that for a fact. And any SOB on this planet that will call me a liar... Come see. I'll give you 1, but I can't give you 3. But I'll give you the first one, and you can tell me whether I hit you the second 2 in the same pocket. And that's what happened to Pat Tillman. They murdered him, son. They killed him. They killed him because he was against George W. Bush, and he was going to speak against him to the nation and to the world, and they know that, and they just lie because they cannot stand the truth. And Bob, I don't want the truth anymore. I want the fact. And what happened to Pat Tillman is a felony against humanity. It's a felony against his mother because they kept her in the dark and they lied to her. And this Rumsfeld, this filthy vampirial piece of crap that called himself what, the Secretary of Defense?
I know.
Bob, I'm going to have to say goodnight because what I would say next,
I understand completely.
Able to be even over the internet to be broadcast because I have such vile and vulgar terms for these people that the words that I would speak would not be fit for the internet, and that is unlimited, is it not?
It is. It is.
And I wouldn't even say them on the internet, but.
All right. Well, we're out of here. I'm going to get some news in here at some point, somehow or another.
From Mike Malloy, I will give you this. Do you know how much I hate these people? Let me tell you.
I know.
Hi.
Bob, thanks so much. You take care.
Love you much.
Be net.
And goodness and health and wealth to your family.
Thank you kindly. You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye now. All right, we're going to do some news. Okay? You're welcome to jump in on this. 304-658-5453. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I'll keep paying.
This is the Quality News Network. In Minnesota, there are as many as 30 people still missing in the aftermath of last night's freeway bridge collapse. Crews continue recovery efforts at the tangled mess that was the I-35 West Freeway Bridge over the Mississippi. The death toll stands at 4. However, officials expect that number to rise. 79 injured have been counted so far. Dozens of vehicles remain submerged in the Mississippi River, complicating the recovery work. Tons of twisted steel and concrete slabs that fell on top of them. That's the problem. Workers say it could take days. The Transportation Secretary announced a $5 million grant to help deal with the immediate aftermath of the collapse of the 8-lane bridge. The grant will help pay for rerouting traffic and removing debris. Minnesota's Governor Tim Pawlenty ordered all the bridges with similar design in the state to be inspected. The National Transportation Safety Board is on the scene to investigate what caused the collapse. And President Bush today said the federal government would respond robustly to make sure that the Minneapolis bridge is rebuilt as quickly as possible. In Iraq, at least 13 people were killed by a suicide car bomber northeast of Baghdad. The blast occurred at an Iraqi police station, and most of the victims were policemen and recruits. The U.S. military also announced 3 more soldiers have died. At least 3,659 U.S. troops have been killed since the Iraq War began more than 4 years ago. 6 Sunni cabinet ministers resigned this week from the Iraqi coalition government. Today, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's Shiite Muslim party urged them to reconsider their decision and rejoin the cabinet. A senior State Department official said today that the U.S. is not ruling out force to free the 21 South Korean hostages being held in Afghanistan by the Taliban. 2 of the hostages have been killed. It's been 2 weeks since the group was taken captive. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Palestinian leaders today, including Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The U.S. will sponsor a Middle East peace conference this fall. The Senate Judiciary Committee today questioned an aide to Karl Rove, the president's main political advisor. The 29-year-old assistant answered questions about the Justice Department's firing of federal prosecutors. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news next.
Hueyhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but, of course, the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Two deep-diving Russian mini-submarines planted their country's flag under the North Pole. The move is part of the Russian effort to claim much of the Arctic's oil and mineral wealth. A strong typhoon hit southern Japan today with sustained winds of up to 89 miles an hour. A wide area was drenched by rain. Traffic was disrupted. At least five people were injured. A federal appeals court today ruled in favor of insurers and against Hurricane Katrina victims. The survivors of the hurricane cannot collect from their insurance companies due to exclusions in their policies regarding flooding. Toymaker Fisher-Price announced it is recalling nearly a million toys that were made by a Chinese vendor because of possible lead paint. The 80 different types of toys include the Big Bird, Elmo, Dora, and Diego characters, as well as playsets and musical instruments. China's commerce minister, however, insisted that more than 99% of the country's exports are safe. Apple has released a security patch for its new iPhone. The company said the software patch addresses several bugs and security issues. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $76.63 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow closed up 101 points at 13,463. NASDAQ finished up 22 at 2576, and the S&P ended up 6. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, it's your second hour and a half plus a little bit of change. Okay. It's about 25 and a half past the hour, and a quick email observation from our good friend David in South Carolina. Pretty solid, and it sort of connects some dots for me, if you will. He says, David says, the Ripigs need a disaster backdrop for their convention. Not to say that they did it on purpose or anything, but watch them morph it into a 9/11. Also, they want everything as screwed up as possible for whichever Democrat takes over. Bang! Right there. Remember the fit they had? Oh, the Clintons took the W's off the keyboards. Well, A, that didn't happen, and B, what they're taking away from America to make it impossible for the next president, who will be a Democrat, to try anything approaching governance, is criminal, plain and simple. I conjured him a little bit ago. Our good friend Alan the Trucker is on the line with us. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. Hanging in there. I was going to say that these interstates are full of trucks, and these trucks are hauling us around products from China, probably for big corporations like Walmart, Target, places like that. These big trucking companies I hear they're making a fortune, these big trucking companies, and also these big companies like Walmart, Target, and all these. They're making a fortune, but they're hardly paying any taxes at all. Taxes to pay for these roads that they're destroying.
And now, tell me if I'm wrong. Isn't GVW for a semi? What, 85,000? Is that it?
80,000.
But it seems whenever I'm on the interstate, you know, I drive by the way stations, Alan. They're always closed.
Yeah.
Is there something behind that? I mean, I know you guys don't like them, but why are they always closed?
Well, a lot of times if one's closed in one state, then you go in the other state, and that one could be open. And then you never know when they're closed or open.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama, they have mobile scales.
And they'll just set them up at random?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, though. Trucks are heavy and they're loaded up and they're all over the roads more so than ever before. What kind of a toll does that? I mean, do you know what kind of a toll does that take on the road surface itself?
That's a pretty good toll, particularly if there's a lot of weight, not in proportion, like too much weight in the back of a truck or too much weight in the front of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
When it goes across a bridge, it causes a vibration, which could be destructive to a bridge. And I've been in heavy traffic before where it's like stopped on a bridge.
Yeah.
And you can just feel that bridge vibrate.
Oh.
Makes me think of that Kansas City dance floor. You remember that in the early 80s? That
yeah. Collapsed? Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought of it. Exactly. As you go across the country and you do a lot of traveling, what kind of an estimate would you give as to the state of the interstate highway system? Is it in good repair, or has it been neglected?
I think they're, for the amount of traffic out here, I think they're really in pretty bad shape. Also, I think that if Jimmy Carter rightfully got his second term, and we've had Democrats in office all these years, then we would have more mass transportation. And also, if Democrats have been in office all these years, we wouldn't be hauling around so many goods. We'd have more localized economies, which would be okay with me. Because I'd still be working. I'd probably just maybe driving a smaller truck or something.
Well, you mentioned the trucking companies, the big trucking companies making so much money. The real squeeze is on the independent trucker, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's why I never even try that. They're having a hard time, independent truckers.
Because you get slaughtered on fuel, and then the mileage rate doesn't keep up with what you need to keep the truck on the road, does it? I mean, I can imagine that maintenance on one of those things is pretty hefty, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, to be an independent trucker, to get by, you have to be signed on with a company. Get your loads to a company.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way a lot of these guys do. So, and those big companies, I hear, are cheating the drivers, the owner-operators, out of the fuel surcharge that they charge the people that they're hauling freight to. That's what I found out from an organization called OIDA,
mm-hmm.
Owner Operator Independent Drivers Association.
And so, as usual, it's the working guy who takes it on the chin, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the small guy, the small business.
Well, it's Minnesota that we're talking about now. But I'm sure. I mean, I was just sure when I mentioned it, when I conjured you, my mention in your name. I was sure that you would be comfortable saying that it isn't just Minnesota or it isn't just isolated incidents. I mean, you see a lot of bad bridges, don't you?
Yeah, you remember the bridge that collapsed a few years ago in Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I-40.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, I'm glad you added that one to the list.
Yeah, collapsed into the Arkansas River.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you a little nervous, doesn't it?
Yeah, what a way to get your windshield clean.
No, oh, brother. Gallows humor. Gallows humor.
Yeah, that was one of those barges hit that bridge.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, you know, you would hope that these are interstate bridges. These are big bridges. You would expect them to be able to survive a certain amount of, but you know, when they're neglected over a period of time, you're not going to have that, are you?
That's right. Remember the railroad bridge that got hit by bars down in Florida?
Right.
Maybe that's something that's neglected also, is the way the these tugboats to navigate these rivers, not have, they're supposed to have big pillars or something.
Mm-hmm.
People get these bridge columns.
Well, it's a disturbing future that we're moving into, Alan. And
yeah, I'm just wondering, why is it that we don't have bulk freight on trains? We have one big country here, 48 states, right grouped up together. How come we don't have a high-speed rail? I imagine most of these people out here riding around in automobiles rather be traveling by a high-speed train.
It would make a lot more sense. That's another discussion altogether, Alan. But the fact of the matter is, I found out after my own rail adventure about 2 months ago, that freight rail in this country is running at 105% of capacity. Now, that says a lot about diminished capacity, but look at it. You know, there's all the trucks that you mentioned, freight rail running at 105% of capacity, and we sit around and act like everything's A-OK, and it's an economic miracle. But this is... these things are running this way because, again, what you pointed out... you know, we've got stuff coming into the port of Los Angeles that has to get to Vermont, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff I think is just totally unnecessary. These products should be made here in this country, and we should have more localized economies. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I do. I do. That's why at every opportunity, the bag of screws that I need may cost 10 cents less at Walmart than they do at my local hardware store, but I'll go to my local hardware store. However, and so I'm trying to support that local business. On the other hand, though, both of those screws were machined in China, Alan.
Yeah, you can't run from it.
It's hard to get away from it. And now the food supply is going to start coming from China. And there's going to be more incidents of people getting poisoned and killed. I found out listening to the news, they're recalling... Play School or Fisher Price toys because of lead in the paint. Guess what? That's not lead paint from toy factories in America.
Yeah, and lead paint was discovered, 60 years ago? That's poison?
Yeah, we did something about it a generation ago. It's still being used in China. But it's cheaper to use over there, and so that'll, you know, that translates to a little bit better number on the quarterly profit margin.
Yeah, China has they have the free enterprise system or something like that.
Well, you know, the right wing has a fit about them being, you know, the communist Chinese. They're the biggest capitalists on earth. You want to see a vision of what the Republican Party wants America to turn into? Have a good look at China. China that loses 10,000 coal miners a year. China where the cities, I mean, they're